Welcome to Radio Oldie, brought to you by Bailey Gifford. This is a recording from the monthly Oldie Literary Lunch at the National Liberal Club. To book a ticket, please go to www.theoldie.co.uk/lunches.
First speaker's new book has been very widely reviewed with much praise. Angela V. John is a professor at Swansea University. She's written biographies of the suffragettes, Lady Rhonda and Elizabeth Robbins, and the war correspondent Henry Nevinson. And her latest book is about the adoptive father of Richard Burton. It's called Behind the Scenes, The Dramatic Lives of Philip Burton. Ladies and gentlemen, Angela V. John.
Thank you. Yes, thank you very much for that introduction, and lovely to be here. Philip Burton's story could have been invented for the Oldie. Here was a man who had a remarkable life that crossed continents and virtually spanned the 20th century. An Edwardian born in 1904, thank you, born in 1904 in Mountain Ash in South Wales. He died aged 90 in Florida in 1995. He then emigrated to the States in his 50th year, and the older he got, the happier he seemed to become. Some years ago, as has just been mentioned, I wrote the biography of the war correspondent Henry Nevinson, and he was also a champion of causes, and the elderly but still spry and courageous Nevinson joked that he'd founded a League of Age with the motto, "The older, the bolder." Philip Burton, who reinvented himself a number of times, seemed to exemplify that motto. When directing plays in America, he commented that he was getting older but feeling younger. As a young schoolmaster at one of Port Talbot's two grammar schools, Sir had been formal, a little aloof, studious and rather plump. He wore dark suits and sported a gown in school. In his 70s and 80s, however, he revelled in the artistic and relaxed life of Key West. Was slim, clad in shorts and sandals, and relished the sunshine. He hosted endless sherry parties, played a very active part in Key West cultural and gay life, and took long early morning walks. When a British television producer visited Philip to make a programme about him, he accompanied the 87-year-old on one of these walks and, quote, soon had me panting in his wake. Today, Philip is best known as a schoolmaster who trained and transformed his pupil, young Richard Jenkins, into Richard Burton, the legendary actor who took his name and became his legal ward. 2025 marks the centenary of Richard Burton's birth and the year in which Philip began teaching. This period of his life is the subject of the powerful new feature film, Mr. Burton, in which Toby Jones plays the teacher, and I was a sort of consultant on the film. My biography provides some corrective to its drama, but certainly expands this story, focusing on the perspectives of Philip Burton. And I've also been helped by the fact that I come originally from Port Talbot myself, and I knew Richard Burton and his extended family well. I show how the backgrounds of the two Burtons were actually quite similar. Philip was also a coal miner's son from the Welsh Valleys, and he too lost a parent when young. Both grew up in poverty, yet whereas Richard was brought up by a loving older sister and her husband and boasted a large, close-knit family, Philip's childhood was really a very lonely one, deprived in several senses. When he was only 14, his father, whom he adored, was killed in a pit accident. He was never close to his mother, and his only sibling was a half-brother 18 years older and already a collier. Education was Philip's passport. Scholarships to grammar school, then university. He won the latter, by the way, when he was just 16 to read pure maths. All this about social mobility. And by the age of 20, he'd secured the post in Portalbert, where a great love of drama, first nurtured in Mountain Ash when visiting theatre companies, saw him throw his energies into anything to do with drama. And so there were school productions, and his head teacher transferred him from the maths department to teaching English, and he inspired many budding actors, not just Richard Jenkins. He gained a foothold in BBC radio drama, which gave his pupils, as well as himself, exciting opportunities to use their talents. He acted in and wrote plays, two of which had recently been revived. And at the end of the war, he left school teaching to become the features producer at the BBC in Cardiff, when radio was at its height. He worked on just under 200 programmes in Cardiff and London, and was the producer of Dylan Thomas's Return Journey. He even wrote the first TV soap opera. In London, Philip lived within walking distance of Richard's home and continued to give him advice, working behind the scenes with the actor before his classic Shakespearean roles at the Old Vic and Stratford, then later in the States. He would, for example, play a part in helping prepare him for what became Richard's iconic Hamlet on Broadway in 1964. Some of you might have seen The Motive and the Cue. It does acknowledge Philip as Richard's father there, but adopted father, but it doesn't actually mention the part he played in helping him come to terms with Gielgud's interpretation of Hamlet, which then became, of course, the classic Broadway Hamlet, where Richard starred in it. He set up a drama school that still flourishes today in New York. He also directed some plays, in fact, Sean O'Casey's most successful play. And I've listened to many of Philip's lectures when he was running the drama school, and he really captivated students with erudite, yet always lively accounts of dramatists and their work, enhanced by not only his deep knowledge, but also his experience of acting and directing. His great love was Shakespeare, and he delivered sparkling performance lectures on the Bard right across the States. He wrote a fascinating novel about Shakespeare's brother and a book called The Soul Voice, case studies of Shakespearean characters, primarily for actors. My biography of this stage-struck man draws on Philip Burton's previously unseen personal papers. It unfolds a story that's far more varied, unexpected, and dramatic, in more ways than one, than has previously been appreciated. Working on the book has been revelatory for me, with never a dull moment, and I'm thrilled that at last Philip Burton can emerge from behind the scenes and take centre stage as a 20th century transatlantic cultural figure in his own right. And I'll end with a passage from Philip's time as an oldie in Key West, when he gave immensely popular annual lectures, lecture recitals really, with the proceeds going to his local church. In 1978, it was the turn of Macbeth, and I'm reading here from it's a passage from the book. It was preceded by an exhausting week in which he spent 10 hours dealing with press interviews and was so tired that he came close to counselling. He was in his mid to late 70s at this point. Yet it was one of his greatest triumphs. Standing erect, hands clasped behind his back, he was received with tumultuous applause and a standing ovation from the 1,000-strong audience, to whom he gave a dramatic bow. Philip was on stage for almost 2 hours, speaking without notes and non-stop about Macbeth, acting out speeches from different characters to illustrate his arguments, and loving every minute of it. The press reported that to hear Philip Burton on stage is to be completely mesmerised. The next year, his lecture on Lear raised $10,000. Richard Burton, who planned to play Lear in the not-too-distant future, of course that never happened, spent 5 hours on the telephone to Philip discussing his plans for playing Lear. He also wrote to Philip telling him that word of his enormous success had reached him from many sources. He added, "I smiled modestly and said I taught you all you knew. I tell people you don't do anything as common as lecture, that we must coin a new word for what you do to that audience. I tell them that you explode with more passion in one lecture than I do in 10 performances of Hamlet. What should we call them? Lecture Agonistis Passionata? Impressive on a billboard, don't you think?"
Thank you. You have been listening to Radio Oldie, brought to you by Bailey Gifford. Why not get 3 trial issues of the Oldie magazine for just £1? Sure you'll enjoy it. We'll then charge you £25.75 for every 6 issues. Just go to checkout.theoldie.co.uk/offers and enter "old trial" as one word in capitals. That's checkout.theoldie.co.uk/offers and enter "old trial".